Hello and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review. I'm Ben Rylan and we're looking ahead at what's on at the movies today with The Telegraph's film critic Tim Robey. Hello, Tim.
Hi.
Now, we'll be talking about the Oscars. Of course, it's Oscar season, isn't it? They're going to air on Sunday evening. So we'll all have our eyes glued to the screen for that. But we'll also throw in a couple of other releases out at the pictures at the moment too. Gore Verbinski's new horror film, A Cure for Wellness, and Certain Women as well. But Tim, let's start with the Oscars, okay? I mean, where shall we begin? Should we start off with the big one, Best Picture? No, let's save that for a moment. Let's go for Best Actor.
Yes, there we go. Best Actor is a slightly more novel proposition than some of them.
Because
there's a bit of a race, actually. It's a bit tighter than some of them. Casey Affleck was long considered the favourite to win for Manchester by the Sea. I think he's very good in it. But his campaign has been clouded in some controversy because of some sex assault charges that have re-emerged from his past, which I think have led to people wondering if he might actually lose. And if he did lose, it would be to Denzel Washington, I think.
Yeah, that's what I'm feeling as well. So we have Casey Affleck for Manchester by the Sea, Andrew Garfield for Hacksaw Ridge, Ryan Gosling for La La Land, Viggo Mortensen for Captain Fantastic, bit of a wild card in there, and Denzel Washington for Fences. Viggo Mortensen is really the one that no one's expecting, isn't it?
Yeah, he was a bit of a surprise, actually. I'm glad he's got... It's only his second nomination ever, and I think he should probably have had more by now. He was nominated for Eastern Promises, but yeah, I'm pleased to see him in there. I like that performance. I like the film. Andrew Garfield was also in Silence this year, so it feels like they're kind of honouring him for both performances in a way.
He certainly improved following the sad state that his Spider-Man franchise ended up in.
Yeah, I still think his best performances, though, are in Social Network, and also I thought he was fantastic in 99 Homes 2 years ago, opposite Michael Shannon. I haven't been convinced by him this year in either of these roles, but you can see why the nomination is there, and he's the only newcomer in that category. Casey Affleck having lost Best Supporting Actor for Jesse James, but I think Affleck is so good in Manchester by the Sea that he still has a very strong shot at winning.
He could take it despite that, I think, because the performance wouldn't be that good. We've had very controversial nominations for people out there in the past as well, far more controversial than this one. Roman Polanski, obviously, Woody Allen...
That is true. Absolutely, yeah. And the interesting thing, of course, this year is that the whole campaign of Birth of a Nation was scuppered because of quite similar charges and a similar accusation. And the fact that it hasn't derailed Casey Affleck's campaign in the same way that it did for that film has raised some eyebrows, has to be said. But for Denzel Washington, it'll be his third Oscar. He is tremendous in Fences. I think it's a really abrasive, risky performance. He directed the film, and obviously he's a big deal in Hollywood, so you can't rule him out. I think there's some real tension in that race on the night.
Let's move on to Best Actress then. What are your feelings on this one? It's a very interesting race over here because I saw Jackie and walked out of that theatre thinking, Natalie Portman's got herself another Oscar, look at that. But then looking at the lineup, it becomes a little bit more uncertain, doesn't it?
And I think Jackie is not a film that the Academy has warmed to overall.
Unexpectedly, it seemed to be very much Oscar bait.
Yes, I guess so. Although it's a strange and singular film, isn't it? It's not by any means your conventional biopic.
Not at all. It's very, very artistic. But then, given the tone of this year's Oscars, indeed, that would feel a little bit more fitting, wouldn't it?
Yes, I suppose so. My own feeling is that her performance is as much the triumph of the director, Pablo Larraín, in eliciting this very kind of off-kilter sort of attitude from her, as it is Portman's own work, and she does have an Oscar. I think Emma Stone is considered the firm favourite here. She's a delight in La La Land, she always is, and I think it's a sort of opportunity to recognise what they find delightful about her. And if anyone's going to sneak up and take it away, I don't think it's Natalie Portman. I think the sneaky chance here is Isabelle Huppert.
Yes, I was waiting for you to say that, actually.
It's so wonderful that she's been nominated for Elle, which is such an unusual film to get an Oscar nomination at all. I mean, it's such a provocative and kind of sort of head-spinning exercise, that film. She's been working the campaign circuit like a pro. She's been on every red carpet, on every interview, and she won the Golden Globe for Best Actress in a Drama. So there's a lot to be said for her having a slight chance of taking it away from Emma Stone on the night. Still, I feel as though the popularity of La La Land will probably help Emma Stone to a win.
And so the Viggo Mortensen of this particular category then would be Meryl Streep for Florence Foster Jenkins. It feels as though if Meryl Streep makes a film, she'll be nominated. And, I mean, we were saying that when The Devil Wears Prada came out, and we're saying it again, but, I mean, really, to be nominated for Florence Foster Jenkins, is that taking the string a bit too hard?
It's also, if Meryl Streep makes a film and then also makes a very widely publicised speech attacking Donald Trump at the Golden Globes, she gets an Oscar nomination. It's her 20th. I think she's quite good fun in Florence Foster Jenkins, but I don't think she needed the nomination at all. And I think it's a pity that the likes of Annette Bening in particular got nudged out of this category for 20th Century Women. And also Amy Adams in Arrival, I think people thought would get a nomination. Ruth Negger is the newcomer here. She's, if you like, the Andrew Garfield of the group, nominated for Loving, which I think was also considered a slight surprise, but I'm glad to see her in.
She was very, very good in Loving, even if the overall film I found a little bit lacking in some areas.
I thought it was underwhelming.
Yeah, I did come away feeling that way indeed, although I did see it at Cannes after seeing quite a few other films almost at the same time, so that could have been my own exhaustion. All right, let's move on to Best Picture then, because time is short. This is the big one. We have Arrival, Fences, Hacksaw Ridge, Hell or High Water, Hidden Figures, La La Land, obviously, Lion, Manchester by the Sea, and of course, Moonlight. Now, Moonlight, that's just, it's really taking over, isn't it? And a lot of people have suggested that, oh, this is a little bit tokenistic. We had the Oscar So White controversy last year. Now we've got a gay black movie suddenly up for Best Picture. Anyone who's seen the film will absolutely, I'm positive, will tell you, no, this film
it's the real deal.
Every piece of praise that it's got.
I totally agree. I think it's my favourite of the nominees here by quite some distance. But it's actually very nice to see not only Moonlight, but also Hidden Figures and Fences on this lineup. You know, this is a very strong lineup for African American work. And in fact, the best documentary lineup I can mention, 4 out of 5 of them are directed by black filmmakers, which is pretty great. I think Moonlight is the only film with a slim chance of dislodging La La Land, which is very much the bookie's favourite and has been installed as the kind of Oscar's favourite since September, really, in a way that I think it's easy to come a little bit exhausted with it. I'm sort of fed up of La La Land in a way, even though it has much charm and a lot going for it. I think Moonlight has become the sort of the connoisseur's alternative in a way, and perhaps a bit of a protest vote.
I have to say, I love
for all the reasons
films.
You were saying. The kind of the theme in Moonlight, the kind of the idea of acceptance, I think, is very kind of felt very strongly through that film.
It's easy to love both films, I think, but watching Moonlight, you come away with this feeling that you've just witnessed something completely unlike everything else. And although La La Land feels very, very different, it really is a throwback to eras gone by, which is why it feels different. It's bright and fresh and optimistic. We don't see that so often lately. Moonlight is something a little bit more, well, a lot more impressive, I think, because of its deep originality. You really are witnessing characters that are never, ever portrayed on the screen in a story that's never, ever told on the screen, and in a way that's just so simple and subtle and perfect and beautiful.
It really does. It really does strike so many chords, that film, in a lot of people. And I think it's very, very beautifully crafted, and that Barry Jenkins is a phenomenal talent. It's only his second film. And I think he is more of a talent, in my mind, than Damien Chazelle. But Damien Chazelle has done a great job in kind of re-upholstering the musical genre in La La Land. The thing that the emotional element in that people respond to is the kind of if only romantic element, the kind of like if only we hadn't screwed things up and if only we'd figured a way through adulthood into our careers and lives, which didn't make a mess of everything. And people find that quite resonant. But I don't think it is as resonant as the extremely the obstacles facing Chiron in Moonlight through every phase of his growth as a person and his search for happiness and acceptance. And that may well mean that Moonlight does have a shot. And I think it will win a couple of Oscars. It will win Best Supporting Actor for Mahershala Ali, who plays the kind of father figure in the first section. And it will win Best Adapted Screenplay, Barry Jenkins. And Terrell Alvin McCraney will at least take that one home. But whether it has a shot in Best Picture and Best Director, it's a slim one, I think.
I suspect we could be in for another repeat of the Brokeback Mountain situation.
Interesting. It would be almost an inverse Brokeback Mountain, wouldn't it? Because I feel as though, you know, the Brokeback Mountain of this year, in a way, is Moonlight. And it would be a kind of a nice corrective to that having happened.
Ung Lee, of course. Yeah. What I was referring to, Ung Lee walking away with Best Director, but not Best Picture.
I think Damien Chazelle is even more likely to win Best Director than he is to win Best Picture, actually.
Oh, yeah. Watch this space then. Yeah. All right, we'll have to come back and talk more about that after Sunday then, Tim. But we do need to move on. We've got a couple of films to discuss that aren't up for Oscars, but they are up for viewing at the cinemas. So we have A Cure for Wellness. This is from the filmmaker Gore Verbinski. Tell us, Tim, what's it all about?
I'm a fan of Gore Verbinski, and Gore Verbinski is the man who's made the first three Pirates of the Caribbean films, most famously, and therefore has a kind of blank check, in a way, in Hollywood. He spent quite a lot of it on The Lone Ranger, which I think people did not like, and which was a very, very costly commercial flop.
Might say it ruined Johnny Depp's career, but...
I mean, there are other films...
There are a few other factors,
that have contributed to that, let's face it. I actually stick up for The Lone Ranger to some degree, and that... And I really like some of Verbinski's other films. For instance, Mouse Hunt, his debut, which I think is a delightful children's film. And Rango was very good. So I'm up for him doing this kind of gothic madhouse horror exercise, which is what this is. It's set in a spa resort in the Swiss Alps. Dane DeHaan plays this kind of city kid who's sent there to find his boss who's gone missing. It's very Shutter Island, is the first thing to say. The whole scenario is so similar to Leonardo DiCaprio turning up at that asylum and trying to figure out where the missing girl is. Dane DeHaan even looks a little bit like kind of Leonardo DiCaprio's sort of weirder younger brother as well. So you're struck with deja vu at first, and then you're struck with kind of, can we get on with it? Because this film is so long. It's 2.5 hours long, only a few minutes shy of that. And for most of it, we're wandering around this sanatorium in a succession of very stylized Verbinski set pieces in which Dane DeHaan is kind of nearly drowned at one point. He's attacked by eels and various other freaky things happen, which kind of spring from Gore Verbinski's imagination, but don't spring from it in an organized way.
This sounds very unpleasant. And also one of my pet hates in a film is when it doesn't earn its running time.
It really doesn't. This is a punishingly long film. And I feel as though there's a nice freaky little B-movie at 90 minutes struggling to get out here. And instead, we're pacing the corridors going kind of nuts. And Jason Isaacs has some fun. He plays the head of the spa resort, who's this kind of Teutonically accented mad scientist figure. There's sort of little touches of old Universal horror in there. But we just spend forever figuring out what he's up to. And the twists in the film are so heavily signposted that they don't really count as twists. You figure them out half an hour before you're told.
Less of a twist and more of a subtle pinch.
And there's a particularly unpleasant scene at the end, which has earned the film an 18 rating, not for violence or gore, but because there's a really dodgy scene of kind of sexual assault in it. And it's actually incestuous sexual assault, which I think everyone at the screening I was at recoiled from and thought was pushing it and going way too far, and not in an interesting way. It's a bad misfire from him, and I'm sorry to see it happen, because I think he needed something good after The Lone Ranger to kind of put himself back on the map.
Now, the film also caught quite a bit of attention because of its use of fake news as part of the marketing strategy. Interesting, the Blair Witch Project, I recall, used fake news, but that was before it was such a big deal, wasn't it?
Yeah, there was a Super Bowl ad for this, which I think did that, and it got a lot of flack for doing it. It hasn't worked because the film, I think, opened third at the US box office this weekend. It has not been successful. But it actually is not a particularly big budget film. It was made for $40 million. Compared to The Lone Ranger, which was a budget of like $250 million or something like that. So he's downscaled in terms of budget, but really, what is this running time doing? And some people will say, well, you know, it's easy to complain about a running time, but actually, when you're sitting there bored out of your wits...
Yeah, it's the worst thing that a film can do.
For a good hour and a quarter in the middle of the film, just waiting for it to get on with things.
Exactly. Even when a film is quite bad, even if I walk out of a film thinking, God, what an utter waste of time. If it was only a short waste of time, I'm okay. But, you know, a long waste of time, I'm in a bad mood for hours. That is A Cure for Wellness. It's out now worldwide. Now, finally, Tim, we have Certain Women. First, let's hear a clip.
I was so afraid I'd get out of law school and be selling shoes. My mom works in a school cafeteria, my sister in a hospital laundry, so selling shoes is the nicest job a girl from my family's supposed to get.
Let's you and I make an effort to be nice to your mom today.
Why?
Because neither of us do very well without her.
wondering about the sandstone in the front yard. I mean, if you wanted to get rid of it, we'd take it off your hands.
You don't have to sell it if you don't want to. It's just that Gina wants this new house to be authentic.
It'd be so lovely to think that if I were a man, people would listen and say, okay. Oh, it would be so restful.
A clip there from A Certain Women. Tim, this is from the fantastic director Kelly Reichardt. Clearly a much anticipated next chapter from Kelly Reichardt. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I love this. I like most of her films a lot, and I think this might be my favourite so far. It has, like several of her films, Michelle Williams in a key role. She's in the middle of three stories. It feels very much like three short stories linked together, and they're very loosely linked, but they're all set in the Pacific Northwest, where Kelly Reichardt lives and shoots all of her films. The first of them is very much Laura Dern's section. She plays this kind of small-town lawyer who comes to the assistance of Jared Harris's character. In the second, which we heard the clip from, Michelle Williams is in a slightly fraught marital situation. And the link is that we discover what the infidelity is going on, and it links back to the Laura Dern section. The film really is a very beautiful kind of dissection of a state of femininity and kind of doubt and not being certain in your life. The third section, where it really comes into focus, I think is absolutely special, involves Kristen Stewart and Lily Gladstone as two young women who kind of meet at a night class and then over the course of weeks strike up this friendship, which is quite ambiguous and which one of them essentially overestimates. And it becomes this kind of slightly awkward scenario where they don't know how to disentangle from each other. And I think it's stunningly good, that part of the film. And it kind of all the themes come into focus there. It's beautifully done. I wish this film had had more of an awards profile. I think it's a pity that it wasn't given the push that some films have been. I think a little bit like 20th Century Women, the Annette Bening film, which she was neglected for. Even though that managed to get an original screenplay nomination, I think this one is one of those films that has slightly fallen through the gaps. Perhaps it's too subdued, perhaps it's too kind of quietly assured in its themes. It doesn't kind of push a thesis too hard.
She's not really been mentioned in the Oscar circles before Kelly Reichardt, has she? She very much lives outside of that world. She makes a film every so often. She spends most of her time teaching students. She doesn't really consider herself one of those types of, you know, Oscar contender,
that's right, yeah,
celebrity type filmmakers.
Yeah, she doesn't play the game in that way, and her films are in a way a little too intellectual to be part of that game. I think the closest
she'd probably hear that and say absolutely happy with that.
Yeah, the closest any of her films have come up to this point probably to awards attention would have been Michelle Williams's performance in Wendy and Lucy, which is the film prior to this which I liked the most, and she's very good in this again, and so is Laura Dern, who I just think is becoming one of the most reliable character actresses that we have. And Kristen Stewart, again, having a fantastic year with Personal Shopper on its way out, which was her great hit from Cannes last year. But the breakout star here is Lily Gladstone, her scene partner, who I think gives this kind of glowing, very sad, subtle performance. I just thought it all came together tremendously, and I cannot wait to see it again, because it's been a couple of months. I'm going to go back and see it on Tuesday.
Fantastic. What good praise that is. That's Certain Women from the brilliant film director Kelly Reichardt. It will be out soon in the UK and Germany. That brings us to the end of today's program. Thanks to my guest, Tim Robey. You have been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. My producer was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Now, from next week onwards, the Monocle Arts Review is changing its format just a little bit. The revamped show will premiere next Friday at 11 a.m. London time, and it will be a weekly show, also a little bit longer, about 45 minutes, maybe, give or take a few minutes. Make sure to tune in. Any questions about the show, do email Fernando. He's at fp@monocle.com. But for now, I'm Ben Rylan. Bye for now.